Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. So can fishing provide a well-deserved physical and psychological respite for veterans? We're going to open replaying last year's seaside visit with one of Connecticut's most unique and innovative grassroots nonprofits, Veteran Angler Charters, as the organization gears up to tackle its 2018 season of service to local vets. Then we're going to pop in and talk with Ginger Katz about her 14th annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night, and how her organization is modifying its hugely successful Courageous Parenting 101 program and partnering with agencies across Connecticut to help parents and children to combat and not fall victim to the opioid epidemic gripping our state and nation. Then we'll close with an encore chat from around this time last year with Marrakesh Incorporated. They assist individuals facing barriers to employment, connecting to supportive services, accessing housing, and participating fully as contributing members of the community. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. New England Young at Heart, a service network aimed at guiding seniors and caretakers to enriching lives with purpose and meaning, is hosting its own March Madness celebration March 14th from 11:30 to 2 at the Jewish Community Center in Woodbridge. Come out for dancing, lunch, and shopping opportunities galore. Tickets are just $12, but they're going fast, and you've got to purchase them by March 5th. So call 203-887-5047 to get your seats now, or learn more at neyoungatheart.com.
Enough.
Right. Well, from planes and trains and automobiles to horses and bikes and even boats, yes, no mode of transportation escapes the award-winning For the People when it has an opportunity to do good. And I'm here with the three seagoing do-gooders right now on the deck of the Black Mariah here in West Haven, and so pleased to make the acquaintance of Veteran Angler Charters, a nonprofit 501c3 organization that serves veterans. If you'd like to follow along while we chat, you can go to veterananglercharters.org. That's their website to learn about them, because they provide free charter fishing trips to wounded and recovering veterans. And our listeners know that the award-winning For the People is very, very interested in promoting organizations like this who provide some support and relief and do some magic with these veterans. And I've got some here with me today. As a matter of fact, I made the acquaintance of Cliff Potter, a Vietnam veteran who went on to the Army and Air Force National Guard, 33-plus years in service. Thank you, Cliff. I'm told by our other guest on the boat with me, her boat, Captain Kathy Granfield, who was the founder of Veteran Angler Charters, that she was actually pitching the idea of putting this thing together with Cliff at one point. So let me start with you, Kathy. Tell us a little bit more about that nugget of an idea and how it's grown into something that is a multi-state effort and involves dozens of folks just like you who own boats and care about vets.
Well, I got the idea originally, but I think it was either 06 or 07. It was the first year that more servicemen and women had actually come home from combat and taken their own lives. And that that really hit me. I just thought, oh, my God, like that can't keep going on. Somebody has to do something. Mm. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm a teacher. What am I going to do? I had no idea what I could do to help. And I was out on a fishing trip with Cliff, actually, and I was thinking what a nice time we're having out here, and I just thought, Cliff, you know, I have an idea. What do you think about taking veterans who are, you know, newly home from combat, maybe taking them out fishing? Not that fishing is the solution to everything, although if you're raised in my family, they do believe that fishing is the solution to all life's problems. But I just knew that for myself, when I'm feeling really badly, a day out in the water really does help. Yeah. And I knew there was nothing I could do about some of the psychic and physical baggage they were carrying, but what I could do was provide a quiet place where they could be with other vets who really understood their service experience and get away from the shore and have nothing really there except, like, the water and the wind and the fishing. And I thought maybe that would help. So that's sort of what precipitated the whole thing.
Okay.
So, Cliff, you've been out on a few of these journeys, and we've heard from so many other folks that work with veterans that it's challenging sometimes to get them in the same place at the same time and then yet another hurdle to kind of get them interacting. But once they do, magic happens. And I'm sure when you're kind of, as Kathy said, out there on the quiet of the water and there's the distraction of fishing, it really makes a difference. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you've seen while you've been kind of shadowing these trips.
Well, what it is you raise their comfort level. And the buffer of the water, compared to the clinical settings that they might be used to for getting their help, the water has such a different effect on them. And I like to use the term, they have baggage when they come down that ramp. Mm. They set that baggage on the ramp. They go out, fish, relax, make new friends, talk back and forth. It opens up some of the hard-to-reach places where PTSD affects them. Mm. And when they come back, they still might pick up that luggage and carry it back to wherever they're living or residing. Yeah. But it might not be quite as heavy as it was when they left it on the dock. It sure can, more can be accomplished on that water in 1 or 2 hours than can be tried to be accomplished the same thing in a laboratory setting.
Sure.
And so it does affect them differently, but in a positive way. You know, it takes a lot of the negative off of it. Mm-hmm. You know, and PTSD is not like, well, you broke your arm, it's going to heal in 3 weeks. PTSD has no set healing date for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, thank God the government's understanding it, but who knows if they're treating it properly.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the experience, do you feel, based on all that you've seen on these trips, that Kathy is actually inadvertently working toward her goal of trying to reduce the depression, the anxiety, or anything else that might enter into their mind frame and cause them to maybe not want to be around anymore?
We have, and with Kathy's permission, is it okay if I bring up what you told me about 3 weeks ago?
Oh, yeah.
We have positive proof. Oh. She took a gentleman out last year, I believe it was, and correct me. Last October, she took a gentleman out. He was kind of quiet, but he fished, and I believe he even gave you a donation at that time.
Yeah, he sent me a beautiful thank you letter and gave a donation for the program, which is unusual and really wonderful.
Okay.
Then this spring, you ran into him someplace else. And he revealed to her that if he hadn't gone out that day with her, the next day he would have probably taken his life.
Hmm.
So she's on suicide prevention, whether she knows it or not. That's the one she knows about. You have to question how many other lives has she saved, but she doesn't know about. And suicide and PTSD are so still rampant. I mean, everybody wants to cover them up and pretend they're not there.
Yeah.
But if you look at the records, how many military people are committing suicide, and how many people are suffering from PTSD? I mean, you just can't stop. You can't cover it up. You have to address it somehow. And this woman is able to do that and provide a service that you're not. You can't even put a price on it. How do you put a price on how quick somebody's going to, you know, or take their life or not take their life? So it's invaluable service.
That's suicide prevention with a hook, line, and sinker, huh?
That was clever.
New catchphrase. You can have it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
No, actually, fishing with a mission is the slogan of veteran angler charters. And folks, if you're just tuning in, we're here on the Black Mariah in West Haven, a beautiful fishing boat and cruiser with Captain Kathy Granfield. We're also joined by Captain Thomas Bremer, who reached out to us, and thank you for doing that, Tom. Tell us a little bit. Now, you're relatively new to the organization, but you kind of have a special charge, a duty, if you will, to the to this organization. Tell us about what you do.
Yes, John, thank you. I am fairly new to the organization. I've been here for a few months. I actually met Kathy at a fishing show in Rhode Island. I was absolutely blown away by the purpose of the organization as well as the dedication of the individuals. I've come on to try to help raise awareness of the program amongst our donors as well as the veterans that we serve. What sets Veteran Angler Charters kind of apart from the other organizations that I've been involved with is that we are solely donor-based. Donations of kind individuals that care about our veterans is what allows us to operate, and no individuals in our organization take a paycheck. 100% of the funds that are provided go to the directly to serving our veterans. So we certainly appreciate the opportunity today to talk with you about this. Reputable organizations such as yourself is a great way of us getting the word out there. We are fairly small. We run 3 charter boats currently in 3 separate states, but the more support that we get, the more veterans we can help each year.
Mm-hmm. And aside from here in West Haven, where else are these charters based?
We have a boat in Rhode Island and a boat in Massachusetts as well.
Excellent. Well, I got to tell you, I mean, from a broadcasting perspective, it's such a horrid challenge to have to come down here on a beautiful sunny day and stand on a boat and talk to you folks about saving veterans' lives. Let me tell you, this is what really makes it all worthwhile. So Kathy, tell us a little bit more about how you attract the individuals who you take out on at least the trips here on your boat, and a little bit about how maybe other folks that have boats like this might be able to get involved.
When I started, honestly, there was definitely a credibility issue because I was a civilian, and I was cold calling vet centers, just letting them know that we were available to do this work. And it took almost 2 years, actually, from the conception of the idea until we took our first trip. Our first trip was in July of 2009 with the New Haven Vet Center. Mm-hmm. And it really snowballed after that. The guys had a great time, and they went back to the vet center and told their buddies about it. And we went from 6 trips a year to almost 40 at this point. Okay. And I was by myself for the first 5 years. And then I realized there's no way I could by myself kind of keep up with the demand. So I recruited first Captain Mark Pettit out of Massachusetts. He fishes out of Plymouth. And 2 years after that, I recruited Randy Bagwell out of Bristol, Rhode Island. So between the three of us, we start fishing usually in early May. The Rhode Island boat and the Massachusetts boat usually stop the end of September, beginning of October, and I go a little bit longer. I fish usually through Halloween down here in Connecticut. Okay. And we do strictly use licensed charter boats with licensed charter captains. I'm the exception. I'm a civilian, but Randy and Mark are both Navy veterans. And the reason that we just use licensed charter captains is because the extra level of, like, safety and security. You know somebody who's got a charter license, who's running a regular charter business, has got all the safety equipment that they need, they've got all the insurance that they need, they've got medical training, and in the case of our Massachusetts captain, he is actually an EMT, as well as a fireman. So we do our very best to make sure that when the veterans get on the boat, they don't have to worry about anything. They don't have to worry about the captain's qualifications. They don't have to worry about the boat. All our boats are U.S. Coast Guard inspected. So it's just one more layer that they can let go. You know?
And from how far afield of either Plymouth, Rhode Island, or West Haven do you draw the veterans who have come out on these veteran angler charters?
We're drawing primarily from the New England area, obviously. We have had requests from as far away as Texas and California, and I don't have boats there yet. Maybe someday. At this point, we did have someone travel from Pennsylvania, drive all night to come take a trip with us, which was, I just thought that was crazy myself. But, drawing primarily from like 90 miles from each boat essentially mm-hmm. right now.
And if there's a veteran or a family of a veteran who's listening to the program or hears about the program this morning, can they just go on the website and reach you individually, or do they have to be sort of qualified or funneled through a veteran's fraternal or even a federal organization to be kind of hooked up with you guys?
When I started, I worked basically through veteran service organizations of pretty much any kind. Mm-hmm. For a number of reasons. One was we needed to verify that they had a service-connected disability or injury or condition. And I also wanted to have someone on the boat who was either a peer support counselor or a caregiver. So initially when we started, we just worked with groups. But now we do get individual requests from people. So if an individual's out there and they're listening and they're interested in a trip, if they just go to the website and click on the link and send me an email, what we often do is we'll have a trip, say, for example, with the New Haven Vet Center or the Hartford Vet Center, and instead of having five guys come, I'll have three, and then I'll add two individuals who've contacted me privately. So we do take between five and six individuals every trip.
And did I hear you right? You often or always are accompanied by a clinician?
Often. If we come with a group, we're always accompanied by a clinician. If it's what's called an open boat trip where people approach me privately, mm-hmm. I do have a group of clinicians who are on standby. And if and this is where it gets a little bit awkward for me. I don't want to invade anybody's privacy with respect to their medical condition.
Sure.
But I do need to know if they need mobility help or if they should have. Yeah, or if you need a clinician on board, basically.
Sure. Yeah.
If someone approaches me privately, I will ask them, you know, if they have any special needs that I need to be aware of. And if that's the case, I do have sort of a laundry list of folks I can call and make sure that we've got somebody on board.
Okay. So how would you like folks listening to the program who may be moved by your philanthropy and want to help support one of these charters or perhaps one of the 40 that you do every year, maybe turn it into 50 or 60 across the network? Or if someone needs to reach out to you because they know a vet they think might be able to experience that potentially life-saving trip out with you on the boat.
The easiest way, honestly, is through the website. If they're on social media, we also have two Facebook pages. One is public and one is a group. They can just ask to join the group. And once they're online, they can just contact me directly that way. It's probably the easiest.
And how about folks who may not be able to write a check and make a donation? Are there any other kinds of volunteer jobs or anything else that folks who either know boats or who may just want to help can do?
I get an awful lot of requests from captains who want to work with us, and unfortunately, we just don't have the funds right now. To do the 40 trips costs us about $30,000 for the year.
Okay.
So I have to raise, when a new captain comes on the one hand, it's that many more veterans that we can provide our service to, but then I have to raise another $6,000 or $7,000 in order for that to happen. So right now, we're sort of topped out at three. We're looking at a fourth captain right now. But our biggest need for volunteers is sort of like what Tom is doing for us, just helping us sort of spread the word about the organization. Helping with fundraising is huge because we don't have any corporate sponsorship at this point, so we're relying really heavily on individual donations. Well, actually, exclusively, pretty much. except for my students. They run a fabulous dodgeball tournament every year that raises a couple $1,000s for our program. My students have been awesome.
And you teach where?
In North Brantford at the intermediate school.
All right. Very good. Well, from teacher to boat captain to philanthropist to the life-saving idea that has become Veteran Angler Charters, Kathy Granfield and her cohorts on board the Black Mariah today in West Haven, Cliff Potter, Vietnam vet and Army and Air Guard Reserve.
National Guard.
Service 33 plus years in service. Cliff, thank you for being on the program and for your service, sir. Captain Thomas Bremer, who did the outreach to introduce us, and I'm sure we'll be coming back again, not just because we like boats and beautiful weather, but we really love folks who kind of start a grassroots idea, and you've heard from the program what it's turned into. We hope you'll reach out to them and help. Captain Kathy Granfield, founder, thank you for having us on board and for your work as well. Go to veterananglercharters.org to learn more. It's a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so any contributions you may make will be fully tax deductible. Or if you'd like to do more, or you are a licensed charter captain, you may want to reach out and see if they can't help you help our veterans here. Thank you, folks, for having us on board.
Well,
Well, we often welcome Ginger and Larry Katz into our studio. We've often talked to her on the phone. We try to visit with them at least once or twice a year. Today, Ginger and I are meeting in a unique location. We're here at the Rogers Park Middle School in Danbury, and we're going to talk about why we're here, a very exciting new development in Ginger's arsenal of speaking opportunities here. If you don't recognize the name, Ginger Katz is a nationally renowned advocate and public speaker for drug prevention, awareness, and education, along with her husband Larry. She's the founder of Courage to Speak Foundation and has developed curricula for elementary through high schools, as well as Courageous Parenting 101, a prevention program for parents themselves, empowering them with tools to help keep their children safe. We want to let you know right away, because it's absolutely free, we would like you to come out on Tuesday, March 15th to the 14th annual Courage to Speak Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night. It's happening at Roten Middle School in Norwalk, and we're going to tell you about how you can get information on that. But if there's anything that you hear on this interview that piques your interest, we'd encourage you to go to couragetospeak.org, their website, where you can find out all kinds of information about what they're doing, find out how to invite Ginger to your school, to your community, to your group, to talk specifically about issues. But the new and exciting news, Ginger, and thank you for meeting me here in Danbury tonight, is this brand new version of the Courage to Speak, Courageous Parenting 101.
Yes, thank you for inviting me, John. And we're very excited because the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services received $5.2 million in Connecticut. Every state in the country received some funding for the opiate epidemic and prevention and other programs. So DMIS, the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, received this funding and distributed it among organizations in Connecticut. We were chosen because we had in place already Courageous Parenting 101, which is a toolkit to keep parents for parents to keep their children safe. Mm-hmm. It's a four-session program. Once a week, parents come out and really learn a lot. Last summer, they asked me to condense it to one session but add the opiate information so it blends in the opiate prevention for parents. Mm-hmm. And makes them very well aware of what a threat this is with their children. Every child, as you know, John, is going to be asked to use, and now it's deadly. And we have to safeguard our children to make sure they make healthy decisions. And this one-session program was asked to be rolled out in five cities in Connecticut where the highest overdose rate is. Mm-hmm. And it's Danbury, Hartford, New London area, Bridgeport, New Haven. This is the fourth out of fifth we're rolling out as a requirement of this grant that we received in the summertime. But since then, I received about eight or nine calls, and we rolled out of those nine calls, we rolled out four of them already. So now we're up to number nine and counting, and we're getting a lot of requests for this program because it has the parenting component. It just doesn't tell you this is the drug, this is why it happened, this is what's going on, and that's it. It gives you parenting techniques to help safeguard your children. Hmm.
So I also understand you, by the time this program plays, it will be, I believe, the day after or a couple of days after your last workshop in Hartford on February 22nd.
That's right.
But does this mean now that this program, which you're calling Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis and Beyond, that this is now kind of an established component of Courage to Speak? So you will now be able to take this as a standalone presentation, a one day, on to other locations?
One day, one night. Mm-hmm. And it's a double dose of prevention. It's actually my story, Ian's story, my son's story, because we lost him to a drug overdose over 20 years ago. So DMIS required us to have my presentation involved with a facilitator. We have 140 facilitators that teach the original Courageous Parenting 101. And now, so I would roll out Ian's story, and then the facilitator will teach the PowerPoint we developed as an adaptation of the original Courageous Parenting 101
very strong program, and the outcomes have been incredible. The rate of in which parents change their feelings about what they originally came in before they went through the front door with the program, and the change was significant, 40 and 50% change of parents' perception. The number one key to prevention is a parent talking to a child, and now they really know it, and they really have changed their mind. They know how important their involvement in their children's lives, especially on this topic.
Mm. The other component, then, it's appropriate to talk about now is Sunny's story, because they say one of the greatest ways to begin to build rapport and help teach your child is to read to them at a very young age. Right. And this is a book that you wrote through the eyes of your pet Beagle, who kind of can relate eye to eye at the children's level,
right,
and begin to impart the information in kind of a very non-threatening but heartfelt way.
Right. It's actually Ian's story told from the eyes and ears of the family Beagle. Sonny, the dog, the family Beagle, tried to wake me up the night Ian died. He climbed four flights of stairs from Ian's bed to mine, telling me that Ian was in trouble. And I thought he just wanted to go out, and I was rocked by my son's words, "Mom, I need help in the morning. I want to go see the doctor." So I slept very soundly because I thought Ian made a decision to go to a rehab the next day. And I got up from and at 4 o'clock, Sonny climbed up the stairs and tried to tell me, but his message was undelivered. So I got up from my morning run, and I found Ian. He had gone downstairs after we talked at 1:30 in the morning and did the drug one more time, and he didn't have a second chance. So years later, I thought if Sonny could talk, he would have a lot to say, so I wrote the book from Sonny's perspective. So Sonny narrates Ian's story, and it's part of the elementary, middle, and high school curriculum that's read at a lot of dinner tables across the country. And it really is a wonderful way to reach all children, not just younger children, because it's not a baby book, but the facilitator's guide in the elementary level is very age-appropriate, and it helps the child understand it very clearly about healthy decisions.
So how young would you say that the youngest students are who are exposed to Sonny's story?
I would say we have it, the youngest grade we have it in is in the fourth and third grade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but honestly, I've talked to some schools in New York City and in Harlem where drug overdoses are so high, and they want to read it to the first graders, you know. But it's being at that it's not a baby book, it's really up to the school system to get the book and figure out what grade they want to start it in. They know their student climate. I'm telling you, even high school kids like it. It is, you'll have to see it. You have to read it for yourself to understand what I'm saying. It's a universal book, and the message is there.
But it's also a parent or a grandparent can get it and read it to their own child. And they can get it through CourageToSpeak.org. They can get that information.
That's CourageToSpeak.org. And it's number one drug prevention book on Google search. So if you Google drug prevention book, Sonny's story will come up. And please go to the Courage to Speak Foundation to get it.
Very good. Well, we're going to give you a quick break because we want to bring in your facilitator here tonight from MCCA. Terry Budlong is with us, and she's going to be talking a little bit about her component of this program, Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis and Beyond. But before we bring her on, we do want to remind folks that they can not only meet and hear a little bit from Ginger and Larry Katz, but they can actually see the fruits of their work as evidenced by hundreds of young children, some of whom will be giving presentations and really opening the eyes of a lot of people who may not really be up to speed on how aware these kids are and the strength and the parents as well. On Tuesday, March 15th, it's the 14th annual Courage to Speak. I'm sorry, March 15th.
13th. March 13th is Tuesday.
Tuesday, March 13th is the 14th annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night, and that's happening at the Roten Middle School in Norwalk. It doesn't matter where you're listening to the program. They'd love to have you. It starts at 5:30. There's some food and refreshments.
Dinner is free, and then the program begins at 6:30. And the mayor, the superintendent, chief of police of Norwalk will be there introducing the students. And listen, we'll be listening to how they're going to keep their vow after they heard my presentation, read the book, did the curriculum that the schools and I developed that are across the country. We happen to be, all these programs are in many, many states, but it's in 87 towns in Connecticut, 39 states and two countries. So we really have expanded a lot in the 20 years. But the event is on March 13th, Tuesday, and dinner at 5:30. And bring your parent, bring your children or your entire family and some of your friends, because this is a prevention event, and it's the best way to get the message across. And you're going to get, and the children are going to help get that message across as well.
And if you don't have the Courage to Speak programming somewhere in your community's school or in your private school, it's a great way to become exposed to the potential.
Yes, a lot of parents, a lot of people in the communities, providers, teachers, and principals come to this event to view what Norwalk is doing in Connecticut.
Excellent. And we're going to talk to Terry Budlong from MCCA, and then we'll bring Ginger back to just give us one more quick reminder about this and how we can get involved with the Courage to Speak and their brand new Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis and Beyond. We are here right now taping at the Rogers Park Middle School in Danbury, one of the cities where this fantastic grant through the Connecticut Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services has passed funding on to Courage to Speak to augment their extended parenting program to this one, which is called Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis and Beyond. So we're going to take a quick moment, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit to Terry Budlong from MCCA, and then we'll bring Ginger back just for a quick reminder.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Have you heard the latest federal stats? It's shocking. Almost 3,500 distraction-related deaths occur every year, and those numbers are increasing. According to the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, whether it's hands-free or handheld, using your smartphone while you drive isn't too smart. In fact, drivers who text or surf the internet on smartphones are 2 to 8 times more likely to be involved in a crash, and those who are just talking while driving increase their risk up to 4 times. The message is simple. When you turn your car, truck, or motorcycle on, turn your attention to your mobile device off. And learn more about the issue at AAAFoundation.org.
Well, thanks for sticking with us. So we're back here at Rogers Park Middle School in Danbury, which is one of the cities where Ginger Katz and the Courage to Speak organization is doing this brand new Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis and Beyond. And the facilitator for this evening is a guest who's been on the program before and a good friend from an organization that's been a strong partner with us at the award-winning For the People, MCCA. Terry Budlong is here with us. And Terry, you're also working with the Danbury Prevention Organization?
Yes, Danbury's Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition is Stand Together, Make a Difference. Mm-hmm. And we do our best to educate the public regarding all kinds of substance abuse and try to keep youth safe.
Now, Terry, are you part of the STMAD because you're a resident of Danbury, or is this something that's sort of tied through MCCA?
I have a grant through the Department of Mental Health Addiction Services that asks that we work very closely with our local prevention council. And so that is my connection, and I have a passion for Danbury as well.
Excellent. Very good. Well, tell us your role in the Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis and Beyond workshop that is going to roll out here in a few minutes at Rogers Park Middle School.
My part includes really the educational portion. Ginger is sharing her story, which is very moving, and I'm providing parent information, tips for parents, some statistics, both Connecticut-based as well as nationwide, mm-hmm. and just trying to increase parent awareness of this opioid epidemic that's affecting so many in our state.
Yeah. When we were talking to Ginger before the break, we were talking about Sunny's story, the book that she wrote, and what a great way for parents to not only engage in reading to their children, but also to be able to impart to them in a really kind of non-threatening way some of that magic that Ginger weaves when she tells her story through the eyes of the pet. For folks who can't be at one of these presentations, I was hoping to tap you to provide just a few high points of information and advice based on the latest best information that you have as Connecticut kind of continues to grapple with this horrible opioid epidemic.
I think it's important to realize that parents are the greatest influence in their child's lives. And we as parents need to talk to our kids. We can't be afraid to tackle the uncomfortable. And the discussion about drugs has typically been very uncomfortable for parents. We have to take an honest look at what's happening in our communities and how people and families are being affected. One in three people experience some kind of addiction in their families. And so opioid abuse, other abuse, has virtually touched every family. You can't go very many places and not meet people who have been touched by losing someone or having someone experience tremendous loss because of addiction. We also know that the longer youth wait to engage in anything, the less chance they have of being addicted later in life. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to avoid. We want our youth to grow up healthy and become prosperous, contributing members of society.
Mm. Back in the day when there was such a stigma about heroin and opioid addiction being sort of like an urban phenomena that really didn't touch suburban and upper middle class and middle class communities, that's really kind of flipped upside down, where most of the victims now are young men of fairly influential economic status in their teens and early 20s. Do you find now that, as you pointed out, there are so many people who have faced tragedies related to the opioid addiction that because of that familiarity factor, it's a little bit easier to start the conversation with a young person between a caregiver, a parent, a grandparent, what have you, because it's so much more relatable to their peer group now?
I think that's a great teachable moment. And that's what we ask our parents to take advantage of, every opportunity to openly and honestly discuss drug use, drug abuse, addiction, genetic predisposition. We've just got to be willing to take that step and walk through open doors as they present.
No, it's okay. The final point that I wanted to try to talk with you about, Terry, is, there are a number of states that are now in the process of or just about to legalize marijuana. Connecticut has talked about it, not talking about it, talking about it, not talking about it. Let's talk about marijuana and the role that it can potentially play, because whether kids see it as a legal entity for adults in Connecticut or in a state halfway across the country, and certainly they're going to be seeing it in Massachusetts soon enough. Do you think that this creates a greater challenge because of both the proximity and now sort of the acceptance factor as a result of it becoming legal for recreational use for adults, particularly in neighboring states?
I think it's very challenging. We know that in terms of youth, the more available something is, whether it's alcohol, prescription drugs, marijuana, medical marijuana, the easier excuse me, it is for kids to get. Mm-hmm. It's more accessible. So, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I think this provides challenges on many, many levels. We have to remember, too, that the adolescent brain is still developing, and this is one of my greatest concerns. What are these kids going to be faced with in terms of mental health issues, schizophrenia, as they get older, as they grow up? We don't know. And I think this younger generation in particular will really be the guinea pigs for showing us exactly what that means. We know that marijuana and mental health issues have some kind of correlation. We know marijuana and opiate use has a correlation. So I think we have to be very wise in our decisions at this point in time and not do things based on any kind of revenue projections or false revenue projections that may be forthcoming, and really concentrate on the health and well-being of our kids. This seems to be forgotten.
Excellent. Great way to wrap up, Terry Budlong, with MCCA and working with the Danbury Area Prevention Council. Thank you so much. Terry is facilitator, along with Ginger Katz, in this Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis and Beyond program that's being presented throughout the state of Connecticut. Want to wrap up with Ginger Katz, who's back with us. For folks that may have joined us late, we do want to remind you that we have a free event coming up in March, the 14th annual Courage to Speak, Empowering Youth to be Drug-Free Family Night. Last word with you, Ginger Katz. Let folks know how they can come and meet you and see the benefits of what you're doing with young people in Fairfield County.
Yes, I ask every parent, grandparent, to come with their family, bring the children, and this is a prevention event, and it'll help you keep your children safe. Children, the earlier the better. If we reach children at the age of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 about this danger in our society, and there are age-appropriate ways to get this message across, they will have a healthier and safer future. And we do prevention education in elementary, middle, and high school, and the children will be there that night making a vow not to use drugs. And also dinner is served. It's a community event. It's open to every community in Connecticut. We usually get 400 to 500 people to come out. You're welcome to come. We want to share with you what we do in Norwalk, Connecticut. And these programs are spreading within Connecticut, so just so you know that. It's not just a Norwalk thing. Right. And it's a great event to bring children to.
Excellent. If you want to learn anything about bringing Ginger and Larry and her organization into your group, your community, your school, if you'd like to learn about Sunny's story and where you can get the book, either to suggest as part of the curriculum for your child's school or to read to your child or grandchild yourself, anything you need to find out, you can learn at CourageToSpeak.org. My guests have been Ginger Katz, nationally renowned advocate and public speaker for drug prevention, and Terry Budlong with MCCA, here tonight from Rogers Park Middle School in Danbury as they present Parenting Through the Opioid Crisis and Beyond. Once again, CourageToSpeak.org is the website, or you could always email gkatz, K-A-T-Z, at CourageToSpeak.org.
We're wrapping up this morning with an organization that's been part of the award-winning For the People for each of the 28 years that I've been doing it. We are pleased to be talking with David Vargas, representing Marrakesh, providing residential employment support, referral, and advocacy services to individuals with disabilities and people with similar service needs to assist them in exercising their human rights as citizens. And David Vargas, thanks for joining us. It really is all about enabling people to be more self-sufficient, more self-sustaining, more confident individuals with disabilities. So we've got a couple of programs that we want to talk about. So let's start with the career exploration that you're going to be doing with junior and seniors in high school.
Sure. So we are working with about 15 different schools and supporting upwards of 70 students currently to do career exploration and kind of go through the work of what kind of education training is required for jobs that they want to go into, should they know where they want to pursue. And for those students who may have never worked before or really don't have a confident idea of what they want to get into, it's using software, talking, and PowerPoints to kind of give them the edge in finding what they want to do. And the goal with that is by doing the classroom trainings first and knowing what the groundwork for education, training, et cetera, is, we're going to be hopefully tying them to an employer in the area who is actually doing a job similar that they want to pursue, and kind of give them an out-of-classroom experience so that they can hear it from someone who's actually doing it and get some of that insider knowledge through an informational interview or a job shadow, just something that we cannot provide because we don't have the experience that the employer that we match them to does.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit, based on your experience, and you know these young people and many of the folks that come to the agency, how far can this exposure in the at the high school level take an individual with some sort of a developmental or other disability in the community? Could this be the beginning of a lifetime career that delivers them into this self-sustaining, tax-paying kind of lifestyle?
You know, it's funny. What we're finding, and Mayor Harp of New Haven actually makes a good reference to it, we're becoming more like a knowledge-based economy where what you can kind of put out there in terms of experience, in terms of training, skills, personality, is really what's going to get you in the door. And even once in the door, the competitiveness of everyone who's applying is really high. So while we only have maybe half of the school year to do this exposure, it's absolutely a great stepping stone. We're giving them printouts of job titles. We're giving them listings for apprenticeships in the area that they can pursue. And by giving them the job shadow and the informational interview, not only are we supporting their social network by giving them a contact that they can refer to, but what I think is also really cool is that come summertime, a lot of these employers that we're meeting and having the kids meet may very well be interested in summer work or volunteer opportunities or internships that, should the students pursue, is always going to be valuable experience. And we have seen, even from last year when we did our work-based experience, a lot of the employers are just very hungry to give the information to the students. And we've actually had some students from the summer get hired, even though we were doing it more as a work exploration versus trying to place them for work. So I think that we're a great start. I know the schools do a lot of this work with their students, but I think we kind of bring a different kind of mindset, being that we are all about employment versus some guidance departments that kind of focus more on after high school with education. And I think that by being in their corner and giving them job titles, actual people they can reference, it's just a great stepping stone for them.
Great. And how about for individuals who are out of high school or at least 18 and over?
So the goal for this Level Up program, which is the title of the program, the students who are going to be graduating, so mainly seniors and are going to be of age, actually have the ability to continue working with the Department of Rehabilitative Services and other community resource providers like Marrakesh to explore further careers and actually find work. So once this is done in the summertime, they have the ability to continue services at the adult level. Now, for those students who go that route, it's very similar to the adults that we're currently working with who seek us for employment training or for job placement. So these adults, not necessarily ones right out of high school, are deemed more work ready. So they have experience in their past, solid skills that would make them competitive for employment. But for one reason or the other, give it the competitiveness of trying to find work, maybe they've had a couple of years off and the recent work experience isn't there. Our goal is to put someone on site to do the work along with the resume and their personality to kind of say, hey, like this person has done it, can do it. You have a need. And we know that based on what they've done in the past and what you've seen, they'd be a great fit. And instilling that confidence in the employer not only allows our person to get a foot in and gain employment, but it really supports the employer and the local organizations that we put people to work, because they know based on what they've seen and the feedback from us and from their other staff that this person really is about doing the work, can do it, and really just wants to continue to do it.
Well, Marrakesh is far from the only agency that we have had on our program who works to assist individuals who may face additional challenges to find a place in the workforce. And I have to say the one thing, although the programs and the people differ, the things that we hear after the fact is that once these individuals are exposed to employers who up to that time, up to that moment, may never have really seriously considered bringing in these special members into their workforce. But once they do, they keep doing it, and it becomes almost a new branch of their workforce, and it tends to be permanent.
Absolutely. We have a lot of great partners that we're working with. Burlington Coat Factory has been wonderful with not only allowing us to do evaluations, but also having people that through what we call working interview, which is essentially an evaluation, but for placement rather than just to explore whether they can do it or not, have hired and continue to hire our people for work. And the staff, especially a shout out to the one in Orange, has been extremely, reliable with us, great communication. But it's like you said, John, once employers kind of see how the program works, they see the person, I think they kind of move away from that stigma and that hesitation of, well, can they do it? And with us in the person's corner kind of showing how and doing it in a in-your-face kind of way, where you can kind of just see everything you need to see, it takes away a lot of that, that scaredness of, well, what if the resume doesn't really match to what the person can do? We're kind of giving them everything. And then we also follow for 90 days. So once we actually place someone for work, it's not like we just kind of dust our hands off and move on to the next person. We do check-ins with the employer. We get feedback. We stop in on site during shift to make sure that things are okay. And we do a lot of contact with both the participant that we're working with and any other community organizations that person's tied to, because it's a team effort. We don't want employers to think that we're doing it for us. We don't get commission. I do what I do, and I know that a lot of the staff here at Marrakesh say the same thing, is because we love people. We want people to embrace their human potential, and work is one of those really unique things that gives someone a sense of fulfillment that nothing else can. And so by giving the employer the confidence in knowing that the person we put is a great fit and letting them see it firsthand, it also gives them the fallback that should the person may not be 100% what they need, that's okay. It's a learning process for us too, but we go forward with the intent of having our person be the best fit for the job and allowing that work experience for the employer to see as our justification for it.
And if word of mouth and proof on paper isn't enough, you've got the 12-week funded opportunity where the employer virtually takes almost no risk.
So let me just very quickly, that's actually for our junior and senior program. Okay. There's a big push by the state to make sure that high school students are more prepared. And so they have extended periods of them for being able to work. For our more work ready, for the adult program, we do have extended supports, but we usually see anywhere between 40 and 80 hours as enough time for an employer and for our participant to know whether or not it's the right fit. The goal being that any training that needs to happen during those times can happen, and we usually set it up on a part-time basis at first so that we're not overwhelming an employer or a participant with 40 hours straight, and by giving us a longer window of time to see behaviors and make sure that tasks are being recognized and done completely, again, just gives the employer a little bit more confidence so that they can see both short-term and long-term of their person's abilities in the job that they're doing.
Excellent. We don't want to let you go, David, without reminding folks that if they're hearing something inspiring and they want to be able to try to help support Marrakesh, they are welcome to come to New Haven. That is up at the Peabody Museum on Thursday, February 23rd from 5:30 to 8 p.m. There'll be a wine tasting. You'll get to see all the incredible stuff at the Peabody Museum in New Haven. And if you'd like to find out more about getting tickets to the wine tasting on February 23rd or any of the programs, or if you're an employer and you heard something today that inspires you to make a call, Marrakesh is Marrakesh. Their website is Marrakesh Inc. INC, MarrakeshInc.org. Check them out. And Dave Vargas, thank you so much for filling us in on these latest and greatest programs with this organization that is doing so much to help transition individuals as young as juniors in high school to the likelihood of productive and sustainable careers and lives here in Connecticut. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.